Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have that you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or you can email me at bonkay@aol.com if you're feeling a little radio shy. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest for this evening, I just want to remind people this is the last reminder for our healing weekend. That's coming up in 2 weeks. I'm so excited that women from all over the world will be joining me here in Philadelphia for a very special healing weekend. We have somebody coming in from Scotland, Canada, West Coast, the South, from all over, as we unite together and begin that healing process or continue the healing process. It is very, very validating to meet dozens of women who are going through your experience when you never even have to say a word or you never have to pretend you don't understand. Everybody there understands you. We have some wonderful workshops that are planned for the second day of the healing weekend. So we are willing to take people in if you want to come, but it's your last chance. So please email me right away at bonkay@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you some information. Tonight I have a very special guest because not only is she a guest, but she's a young lady that I've known since practically childhood. And she is somebody who I am so proud to know because from childhood into adulthood, this woman has really made her mark as far as wonderful things that she's done, Her generosity and her kindness to help others knows no bounds. She has a beautiful philosophy in life of doing to others the way that they should be doing to her, but they don't necessarily do it. But in spite of it, she never loses her faith as far as treating people with kindness. And she's someone I've known, like I say, since she's a little girl. So I'd like to introduce Benita. Hi, Benita.
Hello. Thank you for that. That was really sweet. I appreciate the compliments.
Well, certainly all true, because I think when I met you, you were just a teenager back in 1982. How old were you then?
I was 20 in 1982.
You were just on the verge of adulthood, right?
Just on the verge.
Right, and I had met you at a time when I had just started my support group for women who were married to gay men here in Philadelphia. And when I started the support group back then, times were very, very different. And this was the years before computerization. These were the times when there was, like, a lot of gay hysteria going on. And I was just getting out of my marriage, and I really didn't know anyone who was in a marriage like mine. And although our women feel isolated today when they find out that they have gay husbands, and but at least there's some place where they can go to get help. You know, there's an internet where they can look it up. And they see that there's millions of us out there. We're not isolated and alone, even though we feel like that. But I know that back in the days when my marriage ended and I knew that my ex-husband was gay, I was feeling very lonely and very much alone, and I had nobody to talk to about it. And at that point, I said, I really need to get some support and some help. And actually, the way that I got started was that I saw an article in the Women's Day sitting in the newsstand as I was shopping that day. It was just a miraculous thing that I saw an article written by somebody who was a reporter from Philadelphia, actually, in Women's Day called, her name was Kiki Olson. I'll never forget this because that day changed my life. And when I saw the article, it said stories of six women married to gay men. And I thought, wow, I'm not the only one. There's six more. That she actually found six people in this country. I felt like, wow, I'm not alone anymore. And when I read the article, I started saying to myself, I bet if there's six, there must be some more, but I don't even know how to find that kind of support. One of the suggestions that she made in the article was to contact a local gay fathers group because Gay Fathers was up and running back in those days. And that's exactly what I did. I contacted our local gay fathers group, and I said, I'm a woman who really needs support. And I said, do you have any groups? And they told me at that time that they had a number of women's names, but they had nobody to organize or to run it. And I said, well, guess what? I need the support, so if you want to give me the names, I'll call the people, and I'll organize it, and I'll run it. And that's exactly how I began. I started out the support group back in the end of 1982, and it was actually the beginning of 1983, and the first names that I called were your parents' name. Mm. And I talked to your parents because at that point in time, I really had no idea what the situations were. I knew that my marriage was ending, but I didn't know of others that were staying together, and it was kind of a mixed bag that the names that they gave me. And your mother and father and I kind of lived in the same proximity. We were only minutes away from each other.
Right, right.
Yeah, we were only a few minutes away, and we just bonded really well. And the group started, and I started having weekly meetings at my home at that time. And I spent a lot of time in your house also as we were getting organized and had the opportunity to meet you back then and your siblings. And that's from whence I know you. And a lot of time has passed since then. You're no longer a teenager, just entering adulthood. You've led a very full life since then, but we didn't connect back until a couple of years ago. And that was through the internet, right?
Facebook, good old Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Through the internet, you can really hook up with people. When I saw you were on there, I said, wow, let me try to contact her and see, you know, what is happening in her life and her family's life. So that's how you and I originally met. Back in the old days, and that was over 30 years ago, back when I was middle-aged. Now I'm old. But
no, I'm middle-aged.
And you were young, and you're now almost middle-aged, right?
I am middle-aged, for sure. I'm more than middle-aged.
You're on your way to my age now.
I am, right behind you.
So things have drastically changed from the times that you were growing up. And maybe you could tell people a little bit about your story of growing up with a gay father so they can get a better idea.
Well, it was very confusing. There was a lot of pieces to the puzzle beside my father. So things were tumultuous on a daily basis and dysfunctional and abusive and negligent. So my father's homosexuality was just one piece of the puzzle. So it was a difficult childhood. The kids had an awareness. I was made aware at a very young age, although I was very mature for my years, I was still very young and processing what I was being told for my own benefit was difficult because I was 11 years old. It was my 11th birthday. My mother actually had my father sit me down and tell me. I guess it was her way of justifying her extramarital affairs. But at 11, I kind of knew what it meant because my father has two siblings, a brother and a sister who are both gay and always led that lifestyle. So, and I was very close with my uncle. So I kind of knew what it meant. It was just confusing because this was now my father who was married to my mother. So I think I did the best I could with the ability that I had to comprehend it at the time.
Did you ever ask him questions like, if you're gay, why did you get married? At that age, I'm saying.
No, because I feel like I understood why.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, and you're asking me to go back in my memory a very long time.
Yeah, I was
just
wondering if you might marry.
Yeah, I'm thinking that it was probably more that it was so unacceptable at the time, even though his brother and for him it wasn't unacceptable because my grandmother embraced my aunt and my uncle's partners with open arms, which she did not do with my mother, surprisingly. But in the outside world, I guess it was just, for him, a difficulty coping and being able to have, you know, the kind of a life that he wanted to have. My uncle was very talented and artistic. He made a life for himself. My aunt was the classic. She was a gym teacher, so it was okay. I mean, back then, you know, you were a hairdresser or a gym teacher. So my uncle was a hairdresser. My aunt was a gym teacher. They fit the mold. It was okay with their professions.
Mm-hmm.
So for my father, I mean, he wasn't a hairdresser. He wasn't a gym teacher. He didn't know what he was going to do, but he had, I think it was more, I think he really wanted not to be, and I think he wanted to have the traditional life. And we all know how that goes. So, you know, that's my guess. I really don't speak for him, and his response to that question may be different, but, you know, that's the best guess that I have.
Well, I think it's very possible that your parents loved each other in a different kind of way. And I guess
they
were young
both had
when
their
they
issues.
Married.
So, were they
right.
Were either one of them capable of a healthy partnership or marital relationship? That's a good question.
Well, I know your father would not have been capable since he was a gay man. And your mother,
but, you know, my mother chose him and he chose her, and she had her
exactly.
own issues.
Mm-hmm. They both did, for sure. And I think it's hard on children. You know, one of the things when I first met them, and we had other people in the group, too, who were kind of living non-traditional types of lives. So I was confused. I'm not going to pretend that I wasn't, because I really didn't know anybody else married to a gay person. So the first people I was exposed to, of course, your parents, and they were still together. And then there was another couple that was part of the group, and they were together, and they were both living kind of their own lives. They each had a boyfriend, and yet they were all living in one happy house. So,
yeah, well, my mother, you know, it was the same thing with my mother, only it wasn't a happy house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But these actually were living together in the house, all four of them, the other couple. So they each had a boyfriend living in the house with them. Which I thought was really kind of strange.
With children?
Right.
Ugh. Ugh.
And this is going back to the early 1980s, and I really thought, wow, like, how do you explain this? But, you know, I was taught not to be judgmental at that time, so I wasn't back then. You know, I changed after a couple of years. Because then I had a couple of women, of course, who were horrible with it. You know, they couldn't live with it. And then more couples came, and they were not sure what they were going to do. So we all had different opinions on how you can survive with this or not survive with it back in those days, because we didn't have any real guidelines. And I was just going to school, going into counseling, you know, when I met your parents. But I really had nothing to go by. But you know, once again, people, I was not being judgmental at all, but I certainly know that it wasn't a traditional lifestyle, and I know it must have been hard as children growing up in this kind of a chaotic type of situation where you're just never quite sure really what the real issues here are, right?
Yeah.
It was confusing.
There was nothing that we were sure of. We were sure that we were going to have a roof over our heads and dinner on the table. And I guess in a very twisted way, my father felt like he was doing his job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't put all the blame on him. I blame my mother just as much. Because, you know, when she came to the age of true discovery and she couldn't deny it anymore and she couldn't pretend she didn't know anymore, her inaction or her actions, how she dealt with it or didn't deal with it, that we all had to bear the brunt of, was, you know, not good for anyone.
No, it really wasn't that healthy of an environment. And once again, not just because it was your parents, I'm saying most people in this situation, it's not a healthy environment. I remember, though, when your parents first got married, they had told me, you know, when they were younger and had gotten married, I don't think people really understood gay the way they understand it today.
I think my father definitely understood it. There's no way that he didn't understand. I'm not buying that.
Your mom?
My mom?
Do you think your mom understood it? Because most of us, even if we
wouldn't
suspect
my mother,
this, we wouldn't understand it.
No, and maybe I'm being harsh, but I know my mother, and she's a manipulator, and she has always lived her life in denial.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, it started long before I became aware that that's how she conducted her life. She lived her life believing that things were one way, or convincing herself that they were one way when clearly they were another way, and she just wouldn't accept that. I don't believe that she was naive to it entirely. Maybe in the very beginning, but no. I mean, and she stayed with him for 25 years, so you know what I mean? At some point, she knew exactly.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
exactly. When I met her, she knew exactly. And when we started
absolutely,
our support group.
Absolutely. And to think, I don't believe for one moment that she felt that staying under the same roof was good for the kids. It was never for the sake of the kids, because it was a circus.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother just had, you know, if she had done something different with her life, if they had divorced, my grandmother was there. She would have provided enough for my mother to be okay, and my mother could potentially have met someone and had a decent life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but instead, she stayed with my father. She had these boyfriends who were, you know, out of prison or selling dope or whatever, whoever who would have her and that she could manipulate whatever money they had coming in. And at one time, there was somebody living in the basement. One of her boyfriends was living in the basement and, you know, paying money to my dad and buying things for the house and uncle this one or uncle that one. So I don't want to get too off topic, but, you know, I don't know that my childhood was similar to many of the people in this situation.
I don't think it was typical of most situations. As I said, back then people survived however they could, and not to put any blame because times were so different back then. I think that your mother was well aware, of course, by the time I met her, because
were
part of this group, a support group for, you know, straight gay marriages, and she was certainly aware of all the problems that she was having in her marriage with your father being gay. But she said that if he wanted to stay married and she's going to stay married, then there's certain expectations and he's going to have to live up to them whether he likes them or he doesn't. And she was willing to live her private life. He was willing to live his private life. And in the meantime, the ones who got caught up in all of this were the children, without concern, I guess, for how your welfare was. Which
they were just so
great.
Young and so... so caught up in their own needs and their own issues. My parents married right out of high school. I was born, my father wasn't even 19 until the following month. So they were children. And
they were children playing house, right?
Yeah, and doing it very poorly. And truthfully, I mean, they were just so, first of all, it was a time when things were getting, you know, things were getting, in the 60s and the 70s, you know, the hippie movement and the free love thing and and all the exploration with drugs. Not that my parents were involved in drugs, because they weren't, but there was just so much change going on in society as to, you know, what really is acceptable and what people were doing. And and again, they were really young. They were, I remember what my hormones were like when I was 20. Kind of wish a little bit of that would have stayed with me into my 50s. My husband, too. But they were just not capable of doing anything for anyone outside of their own needs.
So, well, that's a sad commentary of itself, because they did have three children. And, of course, you were the oldest, so you had the children most of the responsibility.
One of which was adopted, incidentally. My brother was adopted, and I think that the thought was that if we had a boy, if they had a boy, that it would make my father more of a man.
Mm-hmm.
So they adopted this baby boy, who to this day is very resentful because he feels like, oh, my God, I couldn't have been adopted by a normal family. I couldn't have had a normal life, you know? I was given up because I wasn't wanted, and this is what I got. Instead of getting the classic young couple who wanted a baby and, you know, could have given such a nice life to a child of someone who didn't want the baby or couldn't, didn't have the resources or whatever, this is what he got. So he carried around anger for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. He was very quiet growing up, I remember.
Yeah, he was.
He really didn't want to have to say anything.
He was very removed from the circus life. He was the baby, and he was the boy, and he was protected, and he was never beaten, and he was the good one. He was the quiet one. His situation, he was very insulated somehow. So even though he was aware, he had an awareness as he got older, it was very different for him.
Benina, I just wanted to mention that back then in those days, and this is not in defense of your parents, but maybe like an explanation of it, because I know how I was. You know, things were so different, as you said. It was the age of sexual revolution, and, you know, I was out in California in the late 60s for a few years. back when anything goes, and it wasn't unusual for people to have orgies and threesomes and foursomes when I was in California. I didn't see it here, but, you know, I moved out there when all of this was happening. And back then, I was under the impression that when you're gay strictly means that you want somebody of the same sex. So I'll never forget when I was 17 years old when I first moved out there, and I thought, oh, people are gay, and we didn't know why. So I thought, well, they must not have been shown the proper love to make them understand that women can love them. And I will never forget, at 17 years old, I met this gay guy who I just fell for totally. And, you know, he would guess she was trying to fall for me, although he had a boyfriend and a sugar daddy. But, you know, we were contemplating at 17 years old, well, maybe if we get married, things will get better. Because at 17, you know nothing. We were just sitting out there getting stoned in California at that time. But the point is that even when I came back in the, you know, later on in the 70s and I started dating someone who told me that he had had two relationships with men and two with women, even that didn't sound so strange to me. Because back then, Dr. Kinsey, who was the expert on sexuality, was saying that 87% of all guys or 78% of all men try some kind of sexual experimentation. So in my head was, well, he tried it, he didn't like it, he must be straight. And I really didn't understand. And when I met my ex-husband, I had no clue.
I have
clue,
a very rigid take on that whole concept, but we can get into that later.
Yeah, so I'm just saying on my own part, I'm not saying about your parents, but I could understand how these things happened back then. And also, coming a little bit later on, as you know, when you started getting out of the 70s and into the 80s, even men who were probably willing to come out when they had the whole AIDS scare.
Oh, yeah.
I think that scared people right back into that closet, even if they were thinking of coming out.
It definitely did. Absolutely. And, you know, people's perceptions were that was God's way of punishing them for sin and all the promiscuity.
Gay remember? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do. Absolutely.
And gay people were really being persecuted. So even if men were on the fence about doing the right thing, they went right back into those closets and stayed there because they were so afraid of, you know, something terrible happening to them. But in spite of it, once again, your father, I don't think, really hid it from everybody, right, when you were growing up?
He tried to hide it, and I guess in his workplace,
maybe his job.
You know, in that regard, he used to take me to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, look, you know my father. He just, you see him, you meet him, you know. And he was really never any different, so.
Mm-hmm. But he didn't think
he was,
people looked at him that way, right?
No, he still doesn't think. He makes fun of what he considers to be the queens. And he's not.
Mm-hmm.
What's the word that they use?
Mr. Macho himself, right?
No. I'm talking about the real queens. He's not flamboyant. That's the word
mm-hmm.
I was looking for. He's not flamboyant, but he's definitely not somebody that you would scratch your head and wonder. You just know.
Right. He is effeminate.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just his name. This is natural way of being, right?
Yeah. It's not intentional. It's not an effort. It's just who he is.
Right. So, I mean, I was never fooled for one moment. You know, I always realized it was what it was. And so if he was trying to hide it, but I guess, you know what, people felt it was hidden because if they were married, people would never think, well, he's a gay man. That's how we used to think back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
You know, gay people didn't get married. They were with each other. So
I still find that there's instances where I'll see somebody, I'll meet somebody, and I'll just know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say to my friend or whatever, that person, well, he's married or she's married. Listen, did you forget who you're talking to? That makes no difference. Even today, there are
mm-hmm.
still people that try not to be who they are. So.
Exactly. And it's a sad thing, but that's why all of us are in this support group together, because we all found ourselves in the same situation. And even though some of us are older, there's plenty of younger women who are in this group also. Because even in this country, even though it's more accepted, it's still not that well accepted in different parts of the country or depending on the religion that you are. So there's, you know, all different
kinds
of...
Yeah, but I think it's less accepted if you go and bring someone else into, you know, you go and get married and have children.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, yeah, it's just too, it's messed up. I also have my feelings about gay couples adopting and raising children. I have feelings about that, too. And I think I'm mm-hmm. very rigid, having, you know, grown up in somewhat in that environment. So,
well, half in that environment, right.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, I had a letter that came in, if you don't mind me asking this question.
No.
From one of our
That's
members.
Why we're here, right?
Yes. And now I know, you know, I explained to her that you knew for quite a while, but she thought that at least you could give her some insight on this. This is a woman in my group, very wonderful woman, and she has children who just recently found out, but they're adult children. So they didn't know when they were growing up. And she said that she feels that, you know, they're accepting it and they say they're fine when she tries to talk to them, and they don't want to go for counseling, and they've been really stoic about it. But did you have any help as far as accepting this? And she wanted to know, what are some of the hidden emotions that, you know, kids feel when they find out their father's gay? What kind of things pop up later after you
find out? Well, I can't say the things pop up later, because with mm-hmm. me that was the case. But the biggest fear I had, as I had explained to you the other night when we were talking,
mm-hmm.
was, am I going to grow up to be gay? I was, you know, like I said, I was 11 when it was, you know, told to me. So being that I favor my dad's side of the family. I have their physiology and everything. I was concerned because I favor that side of the family and it was so prevalent, if it was going to overflow into my life and if I was going to wind up to be that way. So aside from that...
And I think that's really very common with teenagers.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, aside
from that...
I've dealt
with a lot of teenagers who find out about that and... As a result,
now,
I
don't know how old her kids were when they found out.
They're in their late
now.
Teens, early 20s.
Oh, okay.
But I think questioning your sexuality would be a normal thing for a teenager, because we question
it
anyway.
Yeah, that's really the only thing that I struggled with, besides, you know, my mother's inaction with regard to it.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever a time when you thought this could happen to me, though?
To me?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know my own daughter struggled with it, and of course it ended up that my own daughter was a lesbian.
Oh,
but...
yeah, I struggled with whether it would happen, I would wind up to be that way, of course.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I say my daughter, I know, struggled with it. My son struggled with it as a boy because he felt, well, my dad is gay. Does that mean that I'm going to be gay?
Yeah, of
and
course,
I know...
because you carry the same DNA.
Right.
You know, I don't care what people say, these people that have no exposure to it. It is not a chosen way of life. I don't believe that for one second. Because
uh-huh.
if it was chosen, it could be easily unchosen.
Exactly.
I don't believe that. So... You know,
who would
get
choose
over
that if they can make a choice,
anybody
right?
who believes chosen and you can just change and God can help you change. You know, if someone actually has gone through that metamorphosis and they've been successful, I admire you. It's wonderful. You're one in a million, but I just don't believe it's that simple.
Not by a long stretch. And a lot of people have really suffered terribly because they have tried to change. and it isn't their choice. And I think it's a matter of really learning who you are and accepting yourself before you sit. And I mean, people have committed suicide over this.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because they try all kinds of therapy, aversion therapy on them, and punishment, praying to God, telling them they're going, you know, it's a lot of pressure
that they're
on sinners, a lot of people.
And, you know, God's going to turn his back on them, and
exactly. Awful. And when you're growing up that way, it's very difficult. But you're right. This is, I strongly believe that nobody would choose this if they could choose to be straight. And who would want to be gay if they didn't have to be?
Well, so, I mean, and maybe somebody would choose to be gay because they meet somebody that they admire so much and have this, you know, strong connection to. And but if someone were to choose to do that, it would have to be under the right circumstances. I mean, it just, it's not,
whatever. I don't know. I don't think that you can be what you're not. I really don't.
I don't believe that either. It's just like you can't love somebody that where the if the chemistry doesn't exist, you can't force it.
Exactly. And that's what
I think it really is. That we're heterosexual and we couldn't be gay is the same reason that these people are homosexual and can't live a straight life.
Right, and I think that you and I understand that so well, that people don't have a choice in this. But in the meantime, that doesn't help you as a child growing up, right? And having to deal with all of these issues.
Yeah, you know, what are you going to do?
Nothing. You have, like I say, you just have to cope with it. Did you feel that when you were growing up, you said that you didn't officially find out until you were around 11 when your mother told you? But did you have to?
Yes, it was my birthday, actually. It was my actual 11th birthday. God bless my wonderful mother. It was so important for her to be off the hook for her sins, for her crimes, for me to know that it was my father's fault because he was gay, that she chose my 11th birthday for him to sit me down and have that talk.
She couldn't wait till the day after.
No, because it was about absolving her.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, like I say, you had a lot of issues in that family, unfortunately, that I don't know if they were created because they were there before they even met each other or they just played on it as they stayed together.
Oh, no, I'm sure that those issues existed. I know for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
That those issues existed before they met one another.
So let me ask you this question. Some women, you know, they come to me and they say to me, look, I'm not in a happy marriage. I now know that my husband is gay, but I am so afraid to leave because it's going to hurt the children. And I always say to them, that's the most selfish reason to stay.
It really is. I mean, how many people today make it as a single parent? And I mean, first of all, you have to be 150% for your kids, emotionally and mentally and physically. And how can you do that if you're in a marriage to somebody who's leading a gay life and you have to deal with that turmoil and everything that goes with it? You're not a functional human being. You're not emotionally healthy. Just the thought of maintaining that relationship for the sake of the kids. It's never for the sake of the kids, ever. It's for because you're afraid. It's because you're insecure, which is, in most cases, and I can't speak for everyone, but in a lot of cases, it's because these women are that way, which is how they wind up married to someone like that. There's so many things about a woman's self-image and their self-esteem and the way that they perceive themselves or not that is a component to who they choose as a partner, who they're attracted to, why they're attracted to that particular person. It's just like, you know, we all have certain deficiencies and fears and needs, and, you know, gay men have a tendency to be more sympathetic and more, like, I have a lot of gay friends. I have male gay friends. And I get along great with them. They're more sensitive. You know, we have so much more in common than I have with straight men on different, you know, on different levels. And insecure women, gay men are not macho, so they're less intimidating. They're probably, a lot of them are not pursuing or pushing the issue with sex. So a woman might feel more comfortable because they're less likely to push the issue that way, you know, to rush them along intimately. You know, there are a lot of reasons why women would gravitate to somebody like that, but there's definitely components.
Well, I also
themselves.
Say that these men can sense women who have these issues.
The perfect targets.
Mm-hmm, because they're looking for people who, first of all, like I have this book, The Gay Husband Checklist for Women Who Wonder. And in that checklist, I also have a checklist for women who are the prototypes that gay men go for. So
yeah.
They're either women who are coming from broken homes themselves.
Or abuse.
Or rape.
You know.
Exactly. All of those are in there, sexually inexperienced.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the Christian women aren't allowed to have sex,
target.
So they wouldn't even know. You know, it's easy to beat someone down who has no knowledge of what they're supposed to be doing or make them think that there's something wrong with you for wanting so much sex. Or, you know, if they don't have sex before marriage, then that's normal for people who are strong believing Christians, so how would you even know?
Yeah, and they don't even know any better. They wouldn't know
exactly.
The signs or anything.
No, they wouldn't, because they come from a different, you know, way of being brought up. But I
or
think you kind of hit
somebody
it on
that
the,
came
the
from
head,
a really
though.
Bad a really bad childhood where their parents were addicts of some sort and they didn't have the nurturing or given the life skills. Or, you know what I mean? So anybody who's going to
sometimes people
be warm
just
and
pick
fuzzy.
That it's a better choice than the one they're in. We've had a number of women say, you know, when I take surveys all the time and I talk to women and I make, you know, notes of all of this, many of our women came from households where there was abuse, either physical abuse, emotional abuse, mental health abuse, drug and alcohol abuse. And so when the craziness is your normal, because you don't know what normal is, it's easy to move from one circle of craziness into the next one that looks better, but it's just as crazy but in a different way. And you don't know it until you're dancing in that circle of crazy. But these men know it, and they know these women are vulnerable, and it's not just gay men. I always say there's so many predators out there looking for women who are not strong, like you're saying.
Oh, for
sure. Or women who come from, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're not sure of yourself and you're not secure in yourself and you don't build yourself up to love yourself enough to settle for nothing but the best.
Well,
not to
it's
settle,
hard to do that when you that. Don't have that support system growing up.
Exactly, exactly.
So are we going
and
to
yet,
take questions?
I'm just reading the questions that people are sending in to me. So hold on just one second. Okay.
I'm just
somebody
looking at the time. And I don't want to.
That's right. No, we have plenty of time.
Okay.
I have a young woman who just wrote in a few minutes ago from California. And she said that my son, you know, is very, well, I don't know if you would, you know, be able to help him with this, but her son is a teenager, and, you know, he just found out that his father is gay, and he's not being very receptive about being with his gay father and his new boyfriend. Do you have any suggestions about that? So I don't know if that came up with your brother at all.
Well, he definitely, I clearly understand that. I mean, that is the classic, most predictable response from a young fella. It's very uncomfortable. It's harder for a male to, because, you know, they have that picture in their mind. And to think that you know what I mean? It's very intimidating for a young man, and you cannot force that on them. He needs to, he really needs to talk to somebody, and he's going to need time. How old is her son?
He's 16 years old.
Yeah. That's a really hard age to be exposed to something like this.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it has to do with being pro or anti-gay, do you? I think it has to do with your father having
no,
a boyfriend.
Well,
and then...
yes, I think it's his father, and
right.
This is his image of a man all of his life, and, you know, all of a sudden he's got this picture in his mind of his father being with this other man, and it's too close. It's too close for comfort. I have an next door neighbor who's military, and he's from Michigan. And I know it seems like this might not be, it might be off topic, but it really isn't. So he doesn't like gays at all. Gay women don't really intimidate him, but gay men do. And he doesn't want to be anywhere near them. Blah, blah, blah. So I basically said to him, listen, just because a man's gay doesn't mean that they want you. I said, are you attracted to every woman that you see? He said, no. I said, right. A gay man is not attracted to every man they see. So you don't have to worry. Just because they're a man and they're gay doesn't mean that it's going to have any effect on you. It doesn't mean they're going to hit you up. You know what I mean? But some people have this perception. First of all, it's his father. So that right alone is difficult. Secondly, you know, he has this man who is now with his father, and it's perverse to him.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, I think it's easier for a girl than for a boy. I really do.
I think you're right. I mean, especially at that age.
I really feel like they're so inflexible and rigid when it comes to these types of things. And some females are too, but I think that a male is, I think it just hits harder. Now that said, if my mother turned out to be a lesbian and had a woman with her, I don't know if I would feel the same way that this fella feels. It's just going to take time. I mean, 16, he's very young. It's really, really
and
hard.
And I think the men need to understand this issue, too, that they can't force this on their kids. It's not going to make their kids feel any better, right?
Yeah, doesn't want to carry guilt. He wants to think everything's okay. It's very selfish. First of all, he should not be bringing his partner around. That's his partner. That's fine. Whatever. Whatever he does... But this is a shock to his son. And his son doesn't have to accept his partner at this particular time. He needs to understand what he's done to shatter this kid's world. And whether it's intentional or not is not the point.
I think that's so great
kid's world
that you said that because women really struggle with this, Benita. And I tell them the same thing, that your husbands have to realize their whole world's been shattered first by a divorce that they were
Look, they stepped into it. They sold a bill of goods that is not what they delivered.
Mm-hmm.
It's really that simple. And then they went and bring other people into the mix, children who grow up with this picture in their mind of the traditional family. And then you pull the rug out from under them, and then you just want them to adjust to your new lifestyle. This is not about you. It's not about making your partner feel accepted, and it's not about you to get the thumbs up that, hey, it's okay. I'm over it. That's not the way it works.
Thank you so much for bringing that up. I do have one more question that just came in from Texas. And this is from Lisa, and she said, please tell your guests, thank you so much for being so brave. She said her family genetics are gay, as I guess you mentioned with your uncle and your grandma and
right,
your aunt.
Right.
Does she have any fears for her own family?
None.
Okay,
at
because
all.
I think women are dealing with that question also, you know, if they married somebody gay. Now, you know, are there not only are their children going to be gay, but are their grandchildren, even if it skips a generation?
Well, listen, you could come from a long line of heterosexual people
mm-hmm.
and wind up having a gay grandchild. Listen, just like breast cancer, you know how you go to the doctor and they do a history
mm-hmm.
on you, and breast cancer is only a concern if it's in your immediate family. If
mm-hmm.
it goes to your grandparents, your immediate grandparents, it's less of a concern. If it goes beyond that, it's not considered to be a genetic link.
Mm-hmm.
There could be... listen, I'm not a doctor and I'm not a psychiatrist,
mm-hmm.
but I know many people who are gay and there's no one else in their family that's gay. That's less the case. But it is also the case.
Mm-hmm.
But the further away from the family tree you get, the less likely those genes are to be prevalent. So if someone down the road, a grandchild, a great-grandchild, winds up to be gay, I wouldn't necessarily hold that against the mother's cousin's uncle once removed.
Mm-hmm. And if it had
don't overthink
to you,
it. I just think people need not to overthink it because the bottom line is we all are born what we are.
Right.
So.
And it's one thing when you have a gay husband.
You know,
it's another thing when you have a gay child that you can't
yeah,
take that
you
anger
know what, you
out on your child.
You can't predict it and you can't overthink
right.
it. And I wouldn't worry about that. I have no fears whatsoever. I don't. If one of my sons turned out to be gay, which I'm pretty sure at this point they're 15 and a half, and Zach will be 18 in a couple weeks, I'm pretty sure that they're not. But if they discover that they are, look, there's nothing I can do about it. And I love them. And
right.
the one thing I would do is tell them not to do what these other people have done. Get in touch with it and come to terms with it and do the best you can do with what you're given and be happy. But don't drag other people into it trying to be something you're not.
Exactly. And, in fact, before we close, I do have one note from Sally. She's from Connecticut. And she said, please ask your guest, did your mother and father stay friends and why did they decide after 25 years to divorce?
They have not stayed friends. Why after 25 years? My father actually left.
Mm-hmm.
He waited till my brother was 18. He felt it was his responsibility to support the household until my brother was 18. Or maybe he was just afraid he'd have to pay child support if he left before he was 18. I don't know, it wasn't the support because he continued to give my mother money every month for years,
mm-hmm.
years and years and years. And that was voluntary. So I don't know if it helped him absolve his guilt or whatever, but my father doesn't have a nice thing to say about anybody, so,
mm-hmm.
and he's definitely not nice about my mother. And my mother, it took her a while to be angry. And her anger was just the way that he referred to her after all those years. Because she felt like she made such sacrifices for his benefit. and they should have parted friends. And they could have. My mother was not
mm-hmm.
the reason that they didn't part friends.
Was it a strain on your family at all when they split up, or was it kind of a relief at that point?
Not really. My mother was caught up with her own life, and
mm-hmm.
If they were in, it was very seldom they were in the same place at the same time. So
mm-hmm.
if they were, they were cordial.
Mm-hmm.
She moved to Florida, and she hasn't been up and he really doesn't visit much. He really never had. So.
Well, they both went on with their lives, and hopefully they had some happiness after the marriage was over, because they weren't having a lot of it while the marriage was going on.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And maybe they made their peace in their own lives with their own partners that they chose. I would like to think at least they found some happiness.
From one dysfunctional household between the two of them to two dysfunctional households with their carrying on. But that's whatever. I have my own household, and I like to think that it's not perfect, but it's. I think the dysfunction is minimal. I like to think
that.
Thank
goodness, right?
Yeah,
which only goes
yeah.
to prove that
well,
if you're
now
a strong woman
I'm,
who can overlook
yeah,
a
I'm in
whole
charge,
lot
so
of
I
stuff.
Get to, yeah, so.
Well,
my
I do
kids
want
are
to
doing
thank
really
you so
well,
much.
So that to me is the only real true sign that I'm doing something right.
That's the only sign?
Well,
I could give you a dozen of them.
Well, that's the primary sign. I mean, I think that when your kids are flourishing and they're happy and they're successful and they're good students and they're they don't get into trouble and they don't smoke and they don't drink and my son yells at me not to text and to wear a seatbelt, you know. So I think that that's probably the best way, the best sign for me to know that although I'm not perfect, I really did break the chain. You know, I did what I decided, what I said I was going to do, and not carry on the dysfunction into my own life.
And I think that's wonderful, because I think sometimes as we're growing older, I know for me, you know, like the way we act usually is the way it's called learned behavior, and I had to learn to break the cycle also of abuse, emotional abuse, you know, that I was living on my end with, you know, my father and physical abuse also. And you tend to gravitate towards what you know. You know, you always say, well, it's never going to be this way when I have children. I'll never be that kind of parent. But you really have to fight for that. You really have to fight to change because it is learned behavior, and it's the first thing that comes to you naturally. And you have grown such a beautiful family to be so proud of, and it's such a wonderful tribute to you. That
I am. And it's not easy. I mean...
No.
My kids are relatively easy. I have to say I was so blessed. I guess maybe that was God's way of rewarding me for the childhood that I should have had that I didn't, was to give me kids that I could help to have that kind of a childhood, I hope. But I was never... There were some things I could see, you know, I do have some of my father's characteristics, but we were beaten all the time. I can tell you that if I, on one hand, I can count the times that I've smacked my kids, on one hand, almost never ever. I'm not good at punishing either, but I've been blessed with really good kids, so...
Mm-hmm. So you were able to break that
cycle. And they have a good relationship
cycle.
With my dad, by the way. They do have it. They know. My kids know. They understand. And they have a good relationship with him.
Yeah.
So there is hope.
Much,
I mean,
right?
There is hope down the road. You
Do
know,
they see
the
him
year,
very much?
Not very much.
Right. That's
but when they
why.
Do, it's
they
enjoyable. They enjoy his company. He enjoys them. You know, he doesn't carry that resentment and guilt around. They're not a constant reminder of all the anguish that he went through and trying to be something that he's not, like I was.
Yeah, could you mention that before we go, just telling people how you feel that was one of the results of being in a marriage like that it's taken out on the children?
Yeah, I think it is. I, at least in my situation, to this day, my father and I can't get along, and he has so much resentment for me, and it comes out of nowhere. And I have to think that just the person that I am and the way I've risen above it, which should make him very happy, because I don't carry animosity. I don't throw it up in his face. It's not something I talk about, but for some reason, he is so resentful to me,
mm-hmm.
and angry, and I have to just think that it stems from, I'm the oldest child of three.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the one who bore, and I cannot say that my sister did not bear a brunt, because she really did. At least my father
mm-hmm.
had, my father thought that I was smart and beautiful in between his, you know, negligence and abuse. But my sister never got those crumbs from him. But my father is, right now he's very guarded. He watches his P's and Q's, because I've gotten to the point where he knows that I'm done. I'm just not tolerating it anymore. He starts, and I'm like, goodbye, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You serve no purpose in my life. I literally said that to him. If this is
mm-hmm.
what I get from you, then you have no purpose in my life. So,
it's a toxic relationship, right? Like, I had to cut
very,
my father
very
out.
Yeah, very, very toxic, very,
right.
very much so. And I'm just on, you know, I just feel like the puppet master now. I've just taken the sticks and the strings. And, you know, if he starts getting off course with me, I just pull the sticks and the strings and I make him dance.
Mm-hmm.
Or I put him down in the closet. I'm just
mm-hmm.
not dealing with it anymore. It's distracting. And I need that energy for positive things.
And it's hurtful. And you don't have to be around people who are hurtful. You've gone through enough hurt in your life. You don't need to
continue
it, right?
Yeah, it's not even hurtful anymore, truthfully. I'm emotionally
mm-hmm.
unaffected by it. And I have
good.
No problem sharing it with my friends. And then
mm-hmm.
my friends will say, oh, my God, what an arrested development. I can't believe your father would say something like that to you. And then I would just remove their name and send it back to him. Listen, this isn't me saying this. This is someone else. This is an objective third party. So will you listen to them? Like, where is this coming from? And, you know, then that only makes them angrier. But then I'm having
fun.
Right,
they
don't
want to hear it.
You know, then I'm like,
he's a typical narcissist. He's not listening
yeah,
to what other
well.
People say bad.
Yeah,
I can't thank you enough for being here with us tonight, Benina. I really hope you'll come back again, you know, later this year. People need to hear
sure.
exactly what you
yeah,
said, and our
absolutely.
Women are looking for it so much. Benita has been so kind to offer to come and talk to our women at our healing weekend to answer their specific questions when we're in a small group. And hearing this, I know, has really helped many women and given them insight, and they'll have a lot more questions, which I'll forward to you.
Yeah, sure.
And,
absolutely.
I just can't thank you enough. What you said is just so valuable to so many of us.
I would do anything for you.
Aw, and the same here, sweetie.
I know.
I do love
I
you. Do. I'm so
I
proud
love
of you.
You. Thank
all right,
you.
So to all of our listeners, thank you for listening in, and have a wonderful week, and we'll be in touch soon.
And it does
night,
get
everyone.
Better, folks. It does get better.
Thank you, Benita. Take care.
All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye.